Hello, and welcome to Listener's Voices. This is Frances.
And Fran.
We are your co-hosts for this episode, which we put out a prompt. We ask for responses, and we air those responses from our community. And today our subject was generosity.
Especially unexpected generosity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we got a few very good responses, and we had originally put out a time frame limitation, but as we don't have as many submissions as we perhaps would like to encourage you to feel free to make them long.
Right.
Long and heartfelt.
Right. No limit on the length. Well, probably maybe 15 minutes would have to be a max. But
so far, we haven't run into that.
Nothing like that. Right. But yeah, don't let that hold you back at all.
So we have two long submissions, and both of them very good.
Mm-hmm. And this is a prompt that was suggested by a former contributor, and we want to make sure you're aware you are more than welcome to submit your prompt ideas.
Yes.
We have another one in the background on hold that's been suggested by a contributor, and we'll get to eventually.
And so next time we have our show, which will be in 2 weeks, what is the prompt then?
The prompt for that one, since we covered trains and other, atypical types of transportation on the previous episode, I thought, well, we do have to give cars some equal time.
Yeah.
So this will be cars, either what your first car was or cars that are memorable for some reason, especially fast or especially troublesome or especially fun.
We all have, hopefully, more than one car in our history and fondly.
Right. Yeah. So that'll be the prompt. That's for the December 21st show. And if you can get your responses in by the 19th, that would be great. And you do that by sending the written or recorded to ktwhwriters@gmail.com or bring them in here to the studio in the Harbor Landing building.
Well, this show, Unexpected Generosity or Generosity of Any Kind, we shall start after airing a late submission from Judy Sauce, and she had a little bit to say about trains but didn't get it in for the last show.
Yep.
So why don't we hear what she has to say about trains? I didn't get a chance to write about the train experiences I've had, and it may be too late, but I've decided to send a few thoughts. I love train travel. I have traveled on trains through much of the United States and parts of Canada, going to visit family, friends, and to meetings. I find training very relaxing and really enjoy watching the scenery. I spent a lot of time in the dome car, plus reading and talking to other passengers. I have mostly traveled alone, have eaten in the dining car a few times, but usually bring my own food and buy some healthy snacks. I also enjoy exploring the depots during layovers and walking the platforms during stops. I've never gotten a private compartment. Fortunately, I can sleep easily in the seats. I heartily recommend train travel. Much less hassle than flying, and much less harmful impact on our environment.
Right. Judy's a smaller framed type person, like I am, so we can get along pretty well sleeping in the seats as they are. Yeah. But really, most normal-sized people would, too.
I find train seats to be a little bit more generous than you would find on an airplane.
Oh, by far, yeah.
So if you don't mind not being able to go all the way flat, you can manage.
But it goes pretty close to flat. Because there's a lot more room between front to back, between mm-hmm. seats, too. Mm-hmm. So, it works.
And once again, we might have another second Trains 2 so
episode. Right, yeah.
Keep in mind, or send them in, and we'll save them for the train show.
And it's a good example. We always welcome late submissions or submissions to previous episodes, and we will shoehorn them in.
And if you'd like to find out all of the topics we've covered, please go to ktwh.org and go down to the Programs tab. And from there, you go to Listeners' Voices, and you'll see all of the shows that we've done. They're archived there.
Right. All 36 of them, I think. This is
37.
Right.
Unbelievable. Well, we have one of our most prolific responders or submissioners is Richmond. And here is his piece.
Hello, fellow listeners. This is Richmond responding to the prompt, Generosity's Unexpected. From December 2010, till around December 2016, 6 years. I worked for a home health care agency in Minneapolis, assisting a gentleman with moderate Alzheimer's, Ben. Originally, I was his driver companion, and we would go on all sorts of fun outings. Lunch, picnics at the Arboretum in Chaska, museums, the Minneapolis Art Institute. He was Jewish, and he taught me Yiddish, which was pretty cool for me to learn a second language. Alzheimer's, though, does not stand still, and within a year he was in a memory care facility. The family kept me on, and I began some music memory initiatives that my companion responded to. And eventually, as he lost his ability to speak, we would sing together, call response. "I've Been Working on the Railroad" was our favorite. I would sing, "I've been working on the railroad," and he would reply, "All the livelong day." There were other things we did. I would read to him, give him massages, offer food and fluids when he could no longer feed himself, and we would go out to the flower garden to sit with the fountain and the butterflies. Ben's family and I became very close, and I attended all the family gatherings, seders, bar mitzvahs, and even a bris or two. At some point, maybe a couple years into working with Ben, his wife asked if I would like to buy his car, which was a mint condition 2002 fully loaded Lincoln Continental, the same car that I'd used to chauffeur Ben in for our daily outings. I was still driving my Dodge Dakota pickup rust bucket with 200,000 plus miles, which had served me well. I was ready for an upgrade. "How much for the Lincoln?" I asked. $25, his wife replied. "Done deal," I said. That sweet ride carried me for about 6 years. Over the remaining time that I worked with Ben, there were other generosities. Gifts from his wife, B, including my first MacBook Pro laptop and a generous cash gift to buy a new guitar. These gifts, so generous, were technological and musical game changers. Being inspired to play my new acoustic six-string, I began performing again. Then I learned how to make music videos on the Mac. 10 years later, my video music recording capabilities has continued to grow. I have a YouTube channel, and some of the highlights there are the Music Nature Video Productions, Agate Bay Dream 1, 2, 3, and 4. Also, one of my other musical video productions has been selected to air in the upcoming North Shores Shorts in Winter Film Festival. The Lincoln's long gone. I'm well into my second MacBook Pro. Hopefully I'll get another year out of it. I've just changed strings on that guitar whose tonal qualities continue to warm with a rich resonance that the years and music played have opened. That guitar was given a name shortly after I'd received it, christened during a mini-concert for Ben and his family. L'chaim, to life, to generosity. L'chaim. Postscript. Ben's son Stephen, a rabbi, wrote a book about his father, The Beauty of What Remains, and the journey that took him down the road of dementia. In The Beauty of What Remains, he writes some about me and how I was with his father, and he gave me a pseudonym, Robert. He called me a mensch, a person of integrity and honor. L'chaim, to life, to generosity. L'chaim.
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain, we all have sorrow, but if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me. Just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. You just call on me, brother, when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on. If there is a load you have to bear that you can't carry, I'm right up the road. I'll share your load if you just call. Need a friend.
Richmond.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just thinking how it's an example of generosity in both directions. You with your caring for the gentleman and
then the gratitude from the family.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful story.
And some would say it is better to give than to receive, but I think sometimes you need to learn how to receive before you can actually give with your full heart.
Right, and in receiving, you are
giving
the gift of them being able to give to you.
It is complete reciprocity. So.
Right, yep. Did we think I'd read mine next?
Shall you read yours next?
I shall read mine next.
Let's go.
Okay, so this is something that happened to me in Korea, one of my trips to Korea back sometime in the 1990s. And I wrote about it at that time. And last night I went through my journal. Well, I didn't go through them very far. I brought down this stack of journals and thought it would be really helpful if I could find where I wrote about this the first time. There'd probably be more detail, but it's quite a stack of journals, and I couldn't really guess which year it was. So this is to the best of my memory. And put on my reading glasses here. So one of my missions during several of my trips to South Korea in the 1990s was documenting areas being used by three species of cranes wintering on the peninsula as a volunteer for the International Crane Foundation. My story of unexpected generosity comes from one of my outings in pursuit of that mission. When not focusing on known wintering sites in and adjacent to the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea, I sometimes ventured out to areas recorded to have been used in years past by cranes, but with no recent sightings. Were cranes still there, but just hadn't been observed and documented because no one had looked? During a period when I was based in Seoul, I decided to make a day trip out to the mudflats of Incheon on the west coast, best known to non-Koreans as the port from which General MacArthur launched the American response to North Korea's sudden invasion of South Korea in June of 1950. During some of my craning times, I had use of a car and did pretty well navigating my way around the country. But at this time, I had no wheels of my own, so I used the subway and train to get to downtown Incheon and thought I could just start walking north to the district where they had been historically recorded. I walked and walked through industrial areas, across train tracks, knowing I was headed in the right direction, but not making much progress due to various obstacles requiring long detours. So eventually I gravitated towards a main artery headed in the right direction, which had city buses. I didn't have to wait long for one to stop. Public mass transit in South Korea is terrific. One rarely has to consult schedules. The buses just come every few minutes. My Korean language was sufficient for this kind of encounter, but not fluent. When the first bus to come along stopped, I asked the driver if the bus would go to the district I was aiming for along the coast, the name of which I have since forgotten. He nodded, so I boarded, paid my fare, and took a seat toward the back, trusting the driver would inform me when we reached the stated destination. My memory might exaggerate the time I spent on that bus, but it seemed like at least 45 minutes of circuitous wandering the streets of Incheon, never anywhere near sight of the coast. The half-filled bus gradually emptied out, and eventually I realized we had reached the end of the route and the bus parked in some random parking lot. The driver came back to my seat and inquired, "Where was it again that I wanted to go?" I told him again. He nodded and returned to exit the bus by the front door and have a leisurely smoke. No more communication between us. After some time, we took off again, retracing the route by which we had come and picking up passengers. I resigned myself to riding the route all the way back to the train station and returning to Seoul with nothing to show for the day. After maybe 15 or 20 minutes on the return route, in busy traffic in a commercial district, the bus suddenly pulls over to the curb, the driver comes back to find me, and, whether by body language or verbally I don't recall, summoned me to follow him off the bus, while another guy boarded the bus and took over the driver's seat. I had no idea what was happening, but, as one does in Korea when in the dark about what was happening, and that happens a lot, I just went with the flow and followed my apparent guide. I don't recall how close the next bus was, whether we walked at all or jumped on another bus that happened to be right there. But soon we were on a different bus altogether, no fare paid, and still no further communication. This was still midday, and the streets and buses were packed with people, and one never really fears for one's personal safety in Korea, at least not at that time, and I think it's still true, at least relative to this country. So I was just living minute by minute, wondering what was going on. But I gradually came to realize we were headed north, paralleling the coast and very close to it, though still on a busy street. Then suddenly my driver guide takes my arm and escorts me off the bus with him at one of the stops. Still a little stunned at whatever was happening, I soak in my surroundings for just an instant, turn to thank him, and incredibly, both he and the rescue bus were nowhere to be seen. I could not believe he had disappeared, seemingly instantaneously. I was at once so grateful that he had gotten me to my destination, but also so distraught that I couldn't at least thank him for his extraordinary act of kindness and generosity. I never could figure out when or how he had arranged for the substitute driver to take his place on his own bus while he tended to the clueless foreigner. Maybe there was a phone booth at the end of the route where he took his smoke. This was before everyone had cell phones in their pockets. How long did it take him to reconnect with his own bus? Did he jeopardize his job by abandoning his bus? What did it cost him in social capital to recruit his friend to sit in for him? Although I was overwhelmed by what had just happened, it also did not surprise me, in a way. Koreans will go way out of their way, for the hapless foreigner especially. It was completely unexpected, but also in character for Koreans, as I have come to know them. I don't recall anything about my return trip to Seoul at the end of my wanderings, but I do recall that, despite reaching my destination, I didn't see a single crane that day. There was absolutely no suitable habitat along the now thoroughly industrialized coastline. So that was my
remarkable
story.
Remarkable.
I know, it still impresses me, and it's not as, especially at that time, things are really loose in Korea. And I mean, you can imagine in this country a person would lose his job for doing that. And in that country, especially at that time, nobody might ever hear about it. And even if they did, I don't know, they're just much more forgiving of things, I guess.
That kind of generosity is acceptable.
Right, yeah, that too, yep. And I mean, it had to be at least a couple hours he was out of commission from his regular role. Yeah.
Well, contrary to popular opinion, I've had somewhat similar, smaller gifts bestowed upon me by New Yorkers on the streets of Manhattan.
Oh, huh.
Asking for directions and having them kind of sigh and then walk you literally 5 to 10 blocks to wherever you needed to go. And then, you know, you go to thank them. They're like, you know, it's all right. And then they just keep going.
Yeah.
But that happened repeatedly. And I know I hear all the time about how New Yorkers are mean and nasty and, and hard people, but I did not find that to be true at all.
Interesting. Good. Good. Very good.
And I think that's the case everywhere, if you look.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. We have stereotypes of peoples, and then on a one-to-one basis.
On a one-to-one basis, people come through. Well, now we have an 8-minute submission from Shane Dickey. And I hope you enjoy this as much as I have.
This is Shane Dickey writing for KTWH Listeners' Voices, December 7, 2024. And the topic this week is generosity. It was late August, and April and I were camped on the desert floor north of St. George, Utah, near Baker Reservoir. Getting there from the Greyhound station had been a chore. Neither of us had done much hitchhiking before, and it had taken a while to settle on an effective strategy. I would hide myself in the scrub, out of sight of any oncoming motorist who would come upon April, hapless and unthreatening, and as they got closer, blonde and pretty, sitting on her huge backpack, thumbs stuck out, wearing her sweetest smile and a cropped T-shirt. Only after they'd started loading her bag in the back of the truck would I emerge from the bushes, making as if I had been relieving myself. "Oh, this is my boyfriend," April would say, and I'd get in the back before they could protest. Anyway, by the time we got to the reservoir campground, chosen because of its proximity to the bus terminal in St. George and promise of swimming, the sun was high in the sky and unrelenting, if not yet at its zenith. It happened that the area was in the midst of severe drought, and the reservoir, described in our pamphlet as being easily accessible by a short trail from the campsite, had shrunk massively and was now half its former size. Though tantalizing, its blue water would require what seemed like an impossible trek of several hundred yards over blazing hot red rock and sand to access. Outside our tent, the temperature had reached the triple digits. Inside, though shaded, was an order of magnitude hotter. A hot wind blew fine sand through any tiny opening and zipper or seam. We'd unwittingly pitched near a colony of fire ants, and they covered the ground outside, streaming into any available orifice, and were so numerous that it was impossible to walk anywhere without them coursing up your ankles and shins, biting indiscriminately. By early afternoon, we were desperate for relief. The local who had delivered us to Baker Campground had told us about another spot, Pine Valley Recreation Area, that he thought would be better suited for summer camping. Situated as it was at elevation, nearly 7,000 feet, we'd learn, and as such, much cooler. The campsite sounded great, but we'd stuck with our plan because we had to be back on the bus in 3 days' time, and were worried about finding a ride back to the station. Pine Valley was at least another 15 miles further up the road. Still, the situation at Baker was untenable, and so, battling ants and sand and blazing heat, we packed up and struck out. The road surface was now so hot, the tar and the cracks had liquefied and stuck to the soles of our boots. After a miserable mile or so, a weather-beaten white Dodge Caravan slowed to a stop in front of us and stood sagging on its axles. A beefy, smiling guy in a sweat-soaked white dress shirt and tie got out and approached us, hand extended. He was on his way to work in St. George from the town of Pine Valley, he said, but exclaimed exuberantly that he couldn't possibly countenance two young people trudging along in 120-degree temperatures without stopping to help. When we told him we were headed up the mountain to Pine Valley Campground, opposite the way he'd come, he hardly hesitated before assuring us he would take us there. No problem, he insisted. His boss would certainly understand. Beautiful up there. As we clambered into the back of the van, I noticed and tried to ignore a disconcerting knock issuing from under the hood that sounded worryingly like a bad valve or rod or some other critical internal engine part. After a few miles, the road became narrower as it climbed precipitously from the desert floor into the mountains. Half a dozen more, and the knock seemed to worsen as the van, under strain, lost power, the road steeper yet and windier. We passed from landscape of low juniper and sage into one of thick ponderosa pine and fir. The air outside cooled. The man shut off the AC and rolled down the windows. This thing has always run hot, he explained with a jolly smile. I looked at the needle and saw it was spiked in the danger zone. I was just about to suggest that he stop there, insist that we were happy to walk the rest of the way, when the vehicle gave a final shudder and quit. All the lights on the dash lit red. He shifted into neutral and coasted to the side of the road. Turning to us, he smiled as if he'd been expecting this. I've been meaning to get this old girl into the shop, he said. Now's my chance. We didn't know how to respond. He explained the campground wasn't far up the road, less than a mile. We couldn't miss it. His sweat-soaked shirt fully adhered to his bulging shoulders, back, and stomach. He got out of the driver's seat, opened the side door for us, shook our hands vigorously, wished us good luck, turned, and started back down the mountain, briefcase incongruously in hand. We finally found our voices and called after him to ask if there was anything could we do. Could we give him any money? His only response was to raise an arm above his head in farewell as he trudged away. We watched him until he disappeared around a bend, then donned our packs and continued uphill. The campground was even closer than he'd suggested. One campsite was available, nestled in a copse of enormous Douglas fir. The tent pad was perfectly level and covered in a soft blanket of needles. Situated nearby was an artesian well from which issued cold, clear water as sweet as we could imagine. The temperature must have been 50 degrees cooler than it had been at Baker just a couple of hours before. We sat on a log bench and marveled at the beauty of the place, at the view of the peaks of Zion Park visible through a break in the trees to the east, at our indescribable good fortune. I had taken off my Red's hat and sat it on a nearby rock, and just then a hummingbird alighted on the bill and looked at us, cocking its head curiously. We did the same in return. We pitched our tent, drank bellyfuls of water, and had some food. We slept in the shade for an hour or two, then decided to walk back down the road to see what had come of our Samaritan's van, maybe leave some cash under our wiper blade. When we reached the place, the van had quit. It was gone, without a trace. April and I looked at each other quizzically, then turned and started back toward our campsite Eden, reflecting on the unthinkable act of generosity a stranger had performed for us, presumably at considerable cost to himself, and trying to remember his name.
Your big toe in the milk of human kindness. Have you ever seen the like of this mankind? If the boy or girl is cute, we simply shoot to starry heights. Any maybe, any might. But oh, it's so capricious. In the face of wonder, we're suspicious. And though we came from frogs and fishes, our taste is far from fine. Put your big toe in the milk of human kindness. Put your big toe in the milk of human kindness. Have you ever seen the like of this mankind? You take the Himalayas, you take Manhattan's finest mountaintop. He wouldn't change his whiskey sour for any bitter crop. But oh, it's so contrary, from Father Christmas to the Virgin Mary. And though the moments of belief fly by before you find, if you just unhand your mind, put your big toe in the milk of human kindness. Your big toe in the milk of human kindness.
So this reminds me, we've had at least two submissions referring to hitchhiking. And we are planning, you can just put this in the back of your heads, to have a whole episode on hitchhiking experiences at some point. And I know Richmond has more to share, and I have several to share, but with the disclaimer that this is not recommended behavior in this day and age.
In this day and age.
Right, yeah. But back in the, I think most of ours.
Back in the day.
In the 70s was, yeah, the high time. But Shane's reminded me of another experience I had that I'll just try to share briefly. It's not exactly related, but a friend and I were on a canoe trip in the Boundary Waters. And it was probably a 4 or 5 day trip. And the last night we camped and we were just about ready to go into the tent and a bear showed up at our campsite. And so we hurriedly took the tent down and started putting things in the canoe and went back and realized that while we were down at the canoe packing things up, the bear had picked up our food pack and taken off with it. And so we had no food for the next morning, and I think we were good, we were within a day of the entry point, so we weren't days out there or anything, but we had nothing. All of our food and cooking stuff was gone. So we had to invite ourselves into someone else's campsite on that lake, because it was after dark already. We couldn't start going looking for a new campsite on a new lake, and the others were full. So I just felt terrible about that. But some people begrudgingly allowed us to put our tent up and stayed there overnight. Canoed to our back to our car, loaded up, went into Ely, and by this time it's probably noon, and we're very hungry. So we go into, can't quite remember the name of the restaurant, but I remember where it is, one street off of the main drag, and ordered our breakfast, and we're counting our money. Thank goodness we had some money with us, and I can even remember it was somewhere like in the $5 range. This is 1970 probably. So we got a whole breakfast for $5. And we get done with our meal and figure out we have enough for it. And then the waitress brings us, I can't remember if it was 2 pieces of pie or 2 pieces of cake, and we're looking at her and worried because we couldn't afford to pay this. Some guys at the table next to ours had observed our behavior and figured out we were kind of on the edge, and I don't remember. We hadn't talked with them, so they didn't know the story that we were just totally out of food. But I still remember. Maybe I'd have to go buy it now to remember the name. It was a company in Duluth, which I think is still there, that does window installation. And if ever after that, whenever I saw one of those trucks, I had this glow of gratitude. It was so sweet.
That is sweet.
Yeah, so just it's not exactly related to Shane's, but for some reason his story brought that to mind.
And if any of these stories jog your memory, feel free to submit on past subjects or this one.
Great.
Now we have Judy Sawson. She has submitted a response to generosity, and we were talking about this off air. You're going to hear my voice because I'm reading the written submission that Judy made. But somehow, we would just think it would feel so much more authentic and genuine if we could have Judy's voice.
Right. We're going to try to work that out.
We're going to try to work that out. But such as it is, here I am. Here is a submission from Judy Sawson regarding generosity. Many years ago, I think it was 2011, I was living in Richfield at the time and attending the Minneapolis Quaker meeting. I saw a request from an organization called Quaker Peace Teams about a month-long program in Bujumbura, Burundi, helping to build a women's clinic. What an opportunity to go to Africa and participate in a service project. There were a few hoops to jump through, of course. Filling out an application and getting accepted. Having the Clearness Committee, which is a Quaker practice for helping people make important decisions, and raising enough money to afford the expenses. I don't remember how much I needed to raise, but I had to pay for plane fare, plus a donation to the project, and the organization sponsoring it. After talking to a few Quaker friends, I decided to ask members of the meeting to help me with the expenses. The response was heartwarming. I was getting close to the amount I needed, but was still short almost $1,000. At the last minute, a man whom I hardly knew contributed just the amount I needed, and I was able to make the trip. I learned so much during my time in Burundi, helping with the African team, exploring the highways and byways of Bujumbura, experiencing new foods and a different culture. Frequently, I was asked if I would come back to Burundi. The young people I met were very proud of their country and wanted people to appreciate it. I never did go back there, but I have wonderful memories, good photos, and much gratitude for the Quakers in Minneapolis who helped me make that trip possible. What an experience. And it takes a village sometimes.
Yeah.
She found hers.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Great story.
Well, I have, I thought of a number of situations in which I have been the recipient of untold generosity. And that's what I love about this show is that it gets me thinking about all of these things that have happened in my life that I'm very grateful for. In 2015, I set out to hike a bit of the Pacific Crest Trail. And I had set out to do it alone and by myself as an act of solitude. And that did not happen. I am very appreciative that it did not happen because it taught me so many things. And I look back on that trip and I have really grown a lot because of it. But there's a phenomenon called trail magic in the long hiking trail world. And there are some interpretations of it, but it's pretty much understood to be people coming and doing acts of kindness for the hikers. So in parts of the desert, there are people who haul out gallons and gallons and gallons of water and keep them stocked in a place that no longer has water. So you'd either have to forgo that entire leg because you cannot get water on that leg, or because these people are so kind, you don't know who they are. You don't know when they're coming. You never see them to thank them. But just in time, you now have water to get to the next source. But so that whole trip, I had worked very hard to be self-sustaining. All of my meals planned ahead, all my resupply packages sent and ready for me in the towns that I would be hitting. And I didn't think I needed anybody else in the world. But even at the onset, it turned out that I needed help to get there because you've got to plan how you're going to get to the trail, what all these logistics. But there's a couple that were known as Scout and Frodo. And they would host people in their home near to San Diego and then drive them to the trail in the morning. And I arranged to stay with them. When I got there, there were 34 of us put up in their backyard in tents and cots, and we had showers, and we had breakfast. They had test our packs to see if we were carrying too much weight, gave us advice. Everybody was, it was like being in a party of sorts. Everybody very respectful, and I read up online that they hosted a little over 10,000 people.
Wow.
In the, let me see how long. They've retired in 2024. They no longer offer the trail start or bringing you to the trail. But I was lucky enough to be one of them. I don't know how many years they did this, but they've hosted 10,000 people in their home. Both of them are storied hikers. One of them is a triple crowner, which means they've done three long trails in this country. And it's just amazing how this trail magic happens everywhere you go. So in another instance of this, my friends and I, who I made on the way because I didn't end up being a solitary soul, my friends and I made it into a small town, and we got to a coffee shop, and we wanted to have breakfast. But apparently all of the waitresses did not show up that day. So one of my friends who had been a waitress picked up the coffee pot, started taking orders, and worked as the waitress that whole morning. And in exchange for that, we got meals for 3 days in a row that we were going to be in town.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, the owner was just so grateful that he expresses that. And all these things happened at every juncture. People would do something kind for you or leave you something, and it just kept continuing. And I've really learned to appreciate being able to receive kindness on that trip. And it makes it so much nicer to bestow kindness, not expecting any kind of return from it. And it makes both people happy.
Indeed. Well, we should play Happy Trails or something.
Happy
maybe,
Trails,
no.
Yeah.
Bomba dee da, bomba dee da, bomba dee da, bomba dee da,
bomba dee da, bomba dee da,
bomba dee da, bomba dee da,
bomba dee da, bomba dee da, bomba dee da, bomba
dee da, bomba dee da,
bomba dee da, bomba dee da, bomba
the clouds when we're together. Just sing a song and think about sunny weather.
Happy trails to you till we meet again.
So I thank everybody for contributing to this show and sharing their memories of generosity.
Right. And if this has jolted your memory, like the other things we've talked about, or given you any ideas of your own stories, please record or write them and send them in, and we will share them next time. And speaking of next time.
Next time your show will be?
Cars. Memorable cars in your past, especially if you're of our generation, you've probably had many cars in your past. And I can remember a lot of them. And so whatever you remember about something unique or something especially troublesome or road trips, you could verge onto road trips. If that's another whole subject in a way, but they are an integral part of road trips. And
we used to name our cars. In my family.
Sure.
Did you?
Yeah. Maybe we'll go through some names next time.
Were you attached to some?
Some cars or some names?
Cars.
Well, definitely to some cars, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, my last one was, we'll get into this next time, but early 90s? No, it was a late 90s. Boy, I'll have to look that up. I had a Honda CR-V that was the best car ever, and they've totally gone elsewhere now. But about 15-year-ago generation. I bet it was a 2001, maybe. Anyway, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll explore that on our next show, which will air on December 21st.
Mm-hmm. And try to make your submissions by the 19th or so. Then we're going to enter into the holiday season when you might have trouble finding time to submit. But
it takes very little time. If you press record on your voice memo and just take 2 to 3 minutes to tell us what you have on your mind and send that to ktwhwriters@gmail.com, and you will be a contributor and we can share your thoughts.
Exactly. Right. Doesn't have to be a big composition challenge.
Well, thank you, Fran.
Thank you, Francis.
And we'll see you all later on the radio.
Thank you. like it for I'm giving for your kindness. I'm dead to you, and I never could have come this far without you. For everything you've done, you know I'm back. Thank you for it.
Chapter 7 of Stories Worth Rereading. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Andrew Jasper Sutton. Stories Worth Rereading. Brotherly Kindness. A man may make a few mistakes, regardless of his aim, but never, never criticise and cloud him o'er with blame. For all have failed in many things, and keenly feel the smarting stings, which haunt the mind by day and night, till they have made offences right. So liberal be with those you meet, e'en though they may offend, and wish them well as on they go, till all the journey end. Sometimes we think our honour's hurt, when someone speaks a little pert, but never mind, just hear the good, and ever stand where patience stood. Look for the good, the true, the grand, in those you wish to shun, and you will be surprised to find some good in everyone. Then help the man who makes mistakes to rise above his little quakes, to build anew with courage strong, and fit himself to battle wrong. End of Chapter 7. Recording by Andrew Jasper.
Can't thank you enough. It's just too much to say. Everything you've ever done to help me on my way. I cannot ever repay. Can't thank you enough. can't thank you enough. There's no way to describe. I just can't explain how I feel down inside. No matter how hard I ever try, I can't thank you enough. No one around reaches a hand out. You were my best damn friend. Now that I found you never cared about I was or where I'd been. How can I ever begin? I can't thank you enough. I can't thank you enough. I just hope that I'll be everything in this world you told me I could be. And in time we'll see. I can't thank you enough. No one around reaches a hand out. You're my best damn friend. Now that I've found you never cared about who I was or where I'd been. How can I ever begin? I can't thank you enough. I can't thank you enough. Can't thank you enough.